someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful. Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 19th of August 2019. I'm Neil De Silva and I hope you've all had a great weekend and you are raring to go for the week ahead. On today's show, we've got a great show ahead of you this morning. For the next hour, we'll be talking about tachycardia. I'm sure many of you have heard of it, but perhaps don't know what it is. We'll also be talking about macular degeneration. And in the middle, our special guest interview of the morning today is Paul Wilson from A Happy Head. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Great form.
It's great to have you on the show this morning. And we're going to find out more about Paul's background and what he's doing now in about 20 minutes or so. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover and to educate and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first or speaking with your local pharmacist. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. A quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed on social media. It's at Health Radio Show. So you can go to Twitter, type in at Health Radio Show, and you can follow the show's Twitter feed. On Facebook, search The Health Matters Radio Show, and you can like the show's page and be kept up to date with the latest news about the show. And you can listen again to this show and all previous 69 shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or if you've got iTunes and an iPod or iPhone, you can also listen to the podcast. Simply go to iTunes and type in The Health Matters Radio Show. Okay, so on to the subject of tachycardia. Now, if you watch certain medical dramas, I can mention one that's been running for about 30 years on BBC One on a Saturday night. You'll often hear them refer to a condition called tachycardia. And actually, a lot of people have heard of tachycardia, but they don't really understand what it is. So for the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to talk to you about what it is, some of the symptoms, and also how you can reduce the risk of getting tachycardia. So essentially, tachycardia is a high resting heart rate. So the average adult's heart beats between 60 and 100 times per minute, depending on levels of fitness and other factors. But when an individual has tachycardia, the upper or the lower chambers of the heart start to beat significantly faster. Okay, then this normally will be above 100 beats per minute, but in serious cases, it can be as much as 400 beats per minute. So it's massively outside the normal range. Now, when the heart beats too rapidly, it starts to pump less efficiently. And the blood flow to the rest of the body, including the heart itself, because the heart is an organ that requires blood and doesn't just pump blood. But when this happens, the blood flow and the oxygen levels are reduced. And that causes a problem, particularly with the muscles of the heart or the myocardium, because they need more oxygen because they're pumping faster. But because they're pumping faster, they're getting less oxygen. So you can see this is a pretty bad cycle. Now, if this condition persists, then these oxygen-starved myocardial cells can die, and that then leads on to a heart attack. So some forms of tachycardia are not that serious, and they're quite easily treated, while others are potentially quite life-threatening. And there are three types of tachycardia. And people don't realise, but they just refer to tachycardia as a fast heartbeat. But actually, there are three different types. So the first type is called a supraventricular tachycardia, which means it's above the ventricle. So this is where problems with the electrical signals in the upper chambers of the heart cause the heart to beat faster. This then reduces the blood flow to the rest of the body because the heart can't pump blood fast enough or effectively enough. It's not carrying oxygen around the body. And the two common types of supraventricular tachycardia are atrial flutter and atrial fibrillation. The second type is ventricular tachycardia. And this is where there are problems with the electrical signals in the lower chambers of the heart, which also cause the heart to beat faster. And the third is sinus tachycardia. And this is where the natural pacemaker signals that send electrical signals to the heart are actually transmitting faster than normal. Now, this can be a natural reaction to things like stress, but it can also be a sign of anemia. It can also be problems, it can indicate problems with the thyroid gland, or you can be just generally sick. Now, as I mentioned, stress can be a cause of tachycardia, and actually that can be a normal bodily response to things like fear, anxiety, or strenuous exercise. But also, if you have a fever, that can increase the heart rate as well. And generally speaking, this isn't normally a concern. But sometimes tachycardia can signify a serious health problem, and arrhythmias, so irregular heartbeat, arrhythmias are the one major factor for strokes. So some of the causes of abnormal tachycardia include things like anemia, some medicines can cause tachycardia, some thyroid problems, as we mentioned, can cause tachycardia. If you're having the onset of a heart attack, that can cause the problem as well. And actually, if you've got other issues with the heart, so if you've got a congenital heart disease or defect, that can cause fast and irregular heartbeats as well. Now, if you're suffering with tachycardia, you'll probably feel it. So some of the symptoms that we get with tachycardia, because of the lack of oxygen that is going around the body, so the heart's pumping, but it's just not getting enough time to uptake oxygen, you can feel dizzy and lightheaded. You can get palpitations, you can get a shortness of breath, where your body is just trying to keep up with the fast heart rate. You can also give you chest pain as well. And you can get sudden weakness and fainting, again, because of the lack of oxygen and the stress that the body is under. In severe situations, people with tachycardia can have a heart attack and they can become unconscious. So if having tachycardia or fast heart rate is quite unusual for you and perhaps you've not experienced it before, might be the time to seek some medical advice. As I said at the start of the show, perhaps call 111 and just check it out with them. There are other conditions that can lead to an increased risk of developing tachycardia. So if you have coronary artery disease, so atherosclerosis, that can increase the risk of developing tachycardia. If you have heart failure or heart attack, as I mentioned, if you've got any congenital heart defects, so conditions that you were born with, that can obviously influence tachycardia. If you have any inflammatory or degenerative heart conditions, or you have chronic lung disease, that can be a factor as well. So if you're unsure whether it's an issue or not, it's always best to get it checked out, have a chat to your doctor, call 111 just to make sure that it's not a serious condition. And if it happens on a regular basis, then it's definitely worth getting checked out, in my opinion. And if you do go to your doctors or you're encouraged to go to the hospital, they will normally put you on an ECG, so an electrocardiogram, and that will measure the electrical signals from the heart just to make sure that the heart's working properly and efficiently. You also may do a stress test. You might be asked to wear a Holter monitor. So a Holter monitor is where you actually wear a heartbeat rhythm machine on your body for 24 hours so they can measure you over a period of time. Or you may be asked to go for an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound that looks at the structure of the heart valves to see if there's anything that's actually wrong with the heart itself, the walls and the chambers. But it's important that you actually take it seriously. So if you're under a little bit of stress and your heart's beating a bit faster, as I mentioned, that is often the body's natural reaction to stress. But if tachycardia has come on quickly or it's coming on a regular basis for no particular reason, definitely worth getting checked out, because if it's not treated, it can lead to a stroke, it can lead to heart failure, and obviously then heart attack. If you have got tachycardia, your doctor may suggest medical intervention, and that could include changes to your lifestyle. So things like reducing stress or taking stress factors out of your life, or finding ways to deal with stress, perhaps drinking less caffeine or less alcohol. If you're a smoker, they'll probably encourage you to quit smoking, and they may encourage you to get more sleep as well. There may be pharmaceutical intervention required, so you may be given medicines to slow down your heartbeat, and you may also be given medicines to deal with the arrhythmia, so to deal with the abnormal heart rhythm. And if there's anything else, if there's nothing actually wrong with the heart, but there's other factors that are leading to the tachycardia or the arrhythmia, you may be given medication for that. An example would be obviously thyroid medication. Okay, so how can we reduce the risk of getting tachycardia, particularly as we get older? Well, it all comes down to having a healthy lifestyle. So if you're carrying too much weight, if you've got a bad diet, if you are quite sedentary, then those are things, those interventions that are often a good way to reduce the risk of heart conditions generally, but tachycardia and arrhythmia specifically in relation to this piece. So if you've got a bad diet, find ways to improve it. Eat genuine whole foods, stay away from processed foods, sugary foods, high saturated fat foods. If you are quite sedentary, then get some exercise in, speak to an exercise professional, maybe get a personal trainer, or just go out for a walk for 10 or 15 minutes a day. Any exercise that you do is better than nothing. And that would hopefully, if you're carrying too much weight, help you to lose weight as well. But I do stress that tachycardia doesn't always need treatment, but it might need monitoring if it's a more serious problem. And if you have any concerns about your heart in any way, please do speak to a healthcare professional, dial 111, or maybe have a more detailed chat with your doctor. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Paul. But to take us there, we have a classic from Bob Seger.
She took his hand. soul. She had been born with a face that would let her get away. He saw that face and he lost all control.
That was Hollywood Nights by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. What a great song. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter. It's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page. And you can listen again to this show on the media page of my website or on iTunes. Go to iTunes, type in, or go to podcast on iTunes, type in the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe to the show's podcast. And as usual, if you'd like to contact me away from social media, you can do so through my website. Go to the contact page, and my website is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Okie dokie, so on to our guest interview of the morning. As I mentioned, today we have Paul Wilson from A Happy Head. Good morning, Paul.
Hello again, Neil.
It's great to have you here this morning.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to find out more about your background and really what you're up to now, specifically with reference to the services and the NLP services that you offer. So, Paul, let's start at the beginning. Perhaps you can give listeners a bit of background as to your earlier years, shall we say, and kind of what's brought you up to the current date. So give us a bit of background of what you've been doing since the 80s.
That was very kind of you to say the earlier years. So I spent the 80s travelling a lot around Europe. I'd sort of spend the summer by the beach getting bronzed, mm-hmm. and then the winter I'd be in ski resorts as a ski bum kind of thing. And then in between seasons, I'd hitchhike around, I'd do odd jobs. I mean, I've been a DJ, I've built it, knocked it down, painted it, polished it, carried it, pushed it, pulled it, all kinds of things. And then came back to the UK in 88, and I'm very proud to say that I am probably the world's worst insurance salesman because I left a commission-only company after 2 years owing them money. How good is that?
Oh, dear, not good, not good.
Not good at all. The thing was, when I was back in the UK, I was getting quite frustrated because I spent a lot of time learning French, put a lot of effort into it, and I wasn't using it.
Okay.
And then just by sheer coincidence, I saw an ad in a local newspaper saying, can you speak French? Do you fancy a challenge? And I went, yes and yes. So I made the call, and this lady rang me up and goes, "Do you speak French?" I went, "Yeah." She said, "Okay, hang on a second." Then you got the old switchboard sort of making the weird noises. And this French lady comes on and starts chatting to me for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then at the end of it, in perfect English, she goes, "You'll do, I'll pass you back."
Okay.
With still pretty much no idea what I'm talking about or talking to.
Yep.
And this is to work at Eurotunnel, the Channel Tunnel, which is still being built at the time. This is early 92.
So what 92. Year? Oh, 92, right,
yeah,
okay.
Beginning of 92, spring 92. And I joined in December 92, and I was there for 25 years exactly.
Wow.
I spent most of the time in operations, so, you know.
Is that on this side of the channel,
both,
or was that in France? Okay.
I worked on both sides.
Right.
For the various jobs that I had, every single, apart from one role in the mid-2000s, I was responsible for sort of work on both sides of the channel.
Okay. So you weren't the ones in the hole, digging the hole, making the tunnel?
No, I missed out on that because that was an adventure in itself. But
we were
there sort of during the final phase of construction.
Fabulous. What an experience that must have been.
It was absolutely incredible. I mean, it is still one of the sort of modern wonders of the world from an engineering perspective. It's just incredible. And when you see behind the scenes, it just blows your mind.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about travelling around Europe. What's your favourite part of Europe?
Oh, God, there's too many, to be honest. I love France. France has about the same population as the UK, but it's about 4 or 5 times the size.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has everything from sandy beaches, 30-degree heat, to minus 20 sub-zero temperatures in the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything between. It's an absolutely fabulous place.
It's such a diverse country, isn't it?
Yeah, and also you've got its own languages as well. I mean, in the UK, we talk about sort of slang and different sort of
regional
and
dialects.
Stuff. But in France, they've got completely separate languages, everything from the Basque to the way the Parisians speak.
Yeah, fantastic. So that was 2017, you said, that you left Eurotunnel, yeah?
That's right, yeah, December the 1st, 2017.
And so what did you do after that? Where did life take you next?
Well, the problem was that I'd loved my work at Eurotunnel, but in 2015, I was transferred into a role which just wasn't me. I wasn't a good fit. And ironically, on the 3rd of October, which is now known as Independence Day for me, I got knocked off my bicycle on the way to work.
Right.
And I broke 2 bones either side of my right elbow, which meant that I couldn't do anything because I used my right hand for absolutely everything.
Okay.
So this left me with 6 weeks to sit and do nothing apart from think.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one side, it was, well, do I stay where I am and be miserable and bored and make everybody else around me miserable and bored? Or do I take a huge jump off a cliff and see what happens? And it's really funny because I went back to work, was still undecided, and I've opened my office door. I'm sorting out all the mail, turning the computer on, the usual kind of thing. And the HR director walks past my door and goes, "Hi, Paul, how's it going? How's the arm?" And I still to this day don't know what happened or where it came from. I went, "Hi, Nick, I'm good. It's good. Have you got 5 minutes? They went, "Yeah, come around to my office."
Right.
Long story short, 2 weeks later, on the exact date of my 25th anniversary, I was out the door with a bit of cash in my pocket.
Wow.
And then I spent
That's quite a moment then, isn't it?
Oh, it is an incredible moment.
Yeah,
it was It was at the same time incredibly scary, but also incredibly liberating, the sense of like, what happens next?
Yes.
And it's entirely up to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I spent 2018 having a ball. That's the only way you can describe it, really. I mean, I did everything from a social dynamics course. I took on a personal trainer and lost some fat, put some muscle on. And I even did a 15-week stand-up comedy course in London with a guy called Logan Murray, which ended up in me doing 2 live gigs. One of them at the Water Rats, which is just up the road from King's Cross and Pancras, which is where Oasis played their first London gig.
Wow.
And it was brilliant. I even had a heckler. Superb. I enjoyed it. Really good.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you.
It might have been. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the journey then from this transition period, from when you left Eurotunnel into the arena and the field of NLP and hypnosis and working with the mind.
Okay. So I was invited to a one-day workshop for something called the Control System, which I had no clue what it was.
Okay.
So I said, okay, yeah, fine, let's do this. And essentially spent the day there, and I was working with this one lady who had a fear of snakes and wiggly things, basically, worms and what have you. And, you know, we did the stuff. And she said, yeah, it's great. I'm sorted. Which kind of like, yeah, fine, whatever. But the next day, this lady and her family went for a walk in the woods. And as usual, hubby is videoing everything.
Yeah.
And he says, look, careful, darling. There's a worm in the middle of the road. You better kind of walk around it. And she goes, no, it's fine. And then very carefully, very gently, she gets down, picks this worm up and carries it and puts it onto the grass. And the husband...
And this is the day after.
This is the day after. Having, you know, the husband is sort of dropping his phone, using every expletive you can imagine because he's just flabbergasted what he's seen.
Yeah.
And she sends me this video. And I look at this thing and go, wow, I have a superpower. It's just absolutely incredible to see the transition from this lady who couldn't actually look at a picture of a worm to actually picking one up and carrying it, you know, incredible.
Yeah.
So I found out who had created this system, a guy called Tim Box.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted him, got trained up in his method, which was, it's absolutely astounding. We'll talk about that later on.
Yep.
And then also went to see some other people in the hypnosis field to take on as much knowledge and learning as I could, because I decided there and then, for lots of personal reasons, that this is what I was going to do and I could help people.
So you'd had an interest in the mind, in sort of how the mind works and psychology prior to this?
Yeah, I'd always had an interest in, you know, NLP and hypnosis and all this kind of thing, but I'd been put off by the traditional methods where you have to sit and learn page after page after page of scripts and go like, you will relax and you will go into a deep, deep, deep trance and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't learn that. So I kind of left it on a back burner. And when I found this system that Tim had created, where you don't need any of that stuff, I thought, yeah, this is for me. I really, really fell in love with it.
So Tim's system is called the control system?
That's correct, yes.
Can you tell us a bit more about why it's different from the traditional forms of NLP?
Well, it's actually a hypnotic kind of system, but with hypnotherapy, you generally put a client in trance.
Okay.
So they kind of like close their eyes and go very, very relaxed, that kind of thing. With Tim's system, you use something that's called IMRs, idiomotor response. And when you work with a client for the first time, it just freaks them out because essentially what you're doing is you're talking to their fingers.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's difficult to sort of demonstrate this without a video or anything. Yeah, what you do is you find out what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
You get a sensation of where that person is with a problem on a scale of 1 to 10. And then you talk to the subconscious via their fingers. You know, one finger says yes, one finger says no. And you kind of talk to the subconscious to find out, you know, if they're happy to bring that number down from 10 to a 0.
Okay.
And for most people, you get to a 0 very, very quickly. It's just incredible. And you're in contact with the client all the time. They're not in a trance. They know exactly where they are. They know exactly what they're doing. In fact, a lot of people are just sitting there absolutely astounded that their fingers are moving without them moving them consciously.
So just remind us what IMR stand for?
Idiomotor response. Let me give you an example. Did you ever mess with a pendulum when you was a kid? You know, had a piece of string on the bottom and you draw a circle and go round and around for yes and straight for no. That's not anything magical. Basically, the tips of your fingers, you have these tiny little muscles and they move subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're making very, very tiny movements that you can't actually see it's happening. And with your fingers, you get, generally speaking, some very, very big movements. With some clients, you have to look very, very carefully and actually watch the ligaments move. But in general terms, you get big finger movements and it just freaks people out.
Wow, fascinating. So in what ways does the control system help people? What sorts of conditions do you often come across that you can help people with?
It could work with all kinds of conditions. I mean, obviously, it's very, very serious mental conditions like, say, schizophrenia and very, very deep, long-standing clinical hypnosis need a different kind of treatment. But everything from phobias to imposter syndrome to some mild depression, anxiety, all kinds of things around this nature. Chronic pain as well, PTSD can all be successfully treated using the control system.
And then things like addictions to alcohol, smoking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Food issues.
Food issues, weight loss, all that kind of stuff as well, yes.
Okay. Let's just go back for a moment and talk about imposter syndrome, because I network a lot. I know a lot of people within my network, and most of those people are small business owners. And it's amazing how many people struggle with imposter syndrome. People who are well-qualified, well-experienced, they have more than enough ability to do the job that they're doing, but they still struggle with imposter syndrome. Perhaps you could explain to us a little bit about what imposter syndrome is, and perhaps how the control system can help people.
Okay. The way I see it, imposter syndrome is you have someone who has been very successful in a previous career, mm-hmm. who wants to either change career completely or maybe start a new business. And for some reason, they get this feeling that as soon as they launch this new business, all of these people are going to pop up out of the woodwork and start ridiculing them and telling them they're hopeless. Mm-hmm. They feel underqualified. They feel inexperienced. They think everybody else is way more experienced, mm-hmm. way more qualified, yep. than they are themselves. And this kind of becomes a mental block stopping them from moving forward.
Yeah. And it's incredibly common, isn't it?
It is surprisingly common, mm. and it's very often in people who you think, hang on a minute, you're an incredibly successful person. Mm. Why on earth do you have this thing called imposter syndrome? Mm.
So how would the control system help someone that's got imposter syndrome? How would it help them to unpick the condition?
Well, the way I see it personally is that there's a disconnect.
Okay.
You have the experienced person who for some reason has completely blanked out mm-hmm. all their past successes, and all they see in front of them is like this massive failure. Which is like, as soon as I start doing X, it just isn't going to work and it's just going to collapse and I'm just going to be ridiculed.
Yeah.
So what we tend to do is to find out the root cause of the problem, because the imposter syndrome is simply a symptom. It's like someone who drinks too much or smokes too much.
Yeah.
That, again, that's a symptom. There's something that's provoking that.
Yeah.
So what we do is we take the client through a process to find out what the root cause is. We talk directly to the subconscious. And then essentially reconnect the client to their reality, which is they are very successful. And yes, the thing they're going to attempt might fail, mm-hmm. but if they put all the effort and experience and work into what they want to do, mm-hmm. there's a very, very good chance it's going to work.
So for all those of you that run your own businesses, or those of you that are just starting up, or all those entrepreneurs out there, those small business owners that maybe are struggling with this condition called imposter syndrome, you know who to call now, don't you? You need to give Paul a call, and we'll give you Paul's contact details at the end of this piece, and I'll also put Paul's contact details onto social media as well. But it is a common problem, and it's nice to know that there is help out there if you want it.
Yeah, there are lots of control practitioners around the country, and actually now in Belgium, in the States, and maybe by the end of the year in Australia as well.
Wow, brilliant, brilliant. So can you talk about some successes you've had, some case studies? Obviously don't mention individuals by name, but perhaps a couple of real-life cases where you've helped people, perhaps with a phobia?
Absolutely, yeah. I got a friend of mine who, she's a very, very strong, powerful, independent lady, and she's not fazed by anything except one thing, and that is spiders, or that was spiders. Mm-hmm. It was so bad that at one stage, her and her husband were going to buy this house in the country, and they were about to exchange contracts the next day, and she had a nightmare. And the nightmare was these millions of spiders came down from the ceiling and started climbing all over her, mm-hmm. and she completely freaked out, and they pulled out of the deal.
Okay.
If she's alone at home and sees a spider, she has to leave the house and go and get a neighbor to remove the spider for her if her husband's not at home. Mm-hmm. If there's nobody around, she used to refuse to go back into the house. After working with me, before we started working to kind of double check how bad things were, I said to my friend, right, I'm going to pull up a picture of a spider on my phone just to see your reaction.
Okay.
Before I'd even typed in the word spider into Google, she was crying and shivering and saying, no, please, don't show me.
Yeah.
The end of the treatment, I said, I'm going to show you a video. She said, yeah, fine, no problem. I found a video of a spider doing its thing, showed it to her, completely unfazed. So that was a real success for me. Mm-hmm. But the big thing was the next day, she phoned me and sent me a video. There she is in a dressing gown with her hair in a towel. She's got the shower and she's got this massive beaming smile on her face. She's in the kitchen. She goes, look what I've done. And next to her, there's an upturned glass with mm-hmm. a piece of paper And there's a small spider in there. She said, I just saw this. I picked it up and now I'm going to put it in the garden.
Hmm.
And she said to me, Paul, you're amazing, because the day before we started working on this, this would have freaked me out and I wouldn't be here now.
Yeah.
And that's why I do it, to see the smile and the sense of relief on a person's face, to see that all that baggage from years ago is just, gone completely.
Yeah. It almost gives them a whole new lease of life, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because she was very frustrated, my friend, that everything in life was fine for her, completely controlled everything apart from this one stupid little thing, using her own words, being afraid of spiders.
Yeah. And I guess other phobias are quite common as well, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. One that I find really strange in this country, in the UK, is the fear of snakes.
Okay.
Because we only have one venomous snake, which is so rare, you have more chance of being struck by lightning than actually coming into contact with one.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you live in the outback of Australia or in certain parts of the United States, I get it.
Yeah.
In the UK, it's just really, really bizarre.
Yeah, when you think, actually, in this country, we don't really have any animals that can, or not any common animals that can cause us serious injury or kill us.
Absolutely.
But you think about Australia, when you think about the sharks and the spiders and the snakes, you know, that's kind of almost a real fear of being stung or bitten by something that could potentially kill you. But in this country, you know, even the big spiders are pretty harmless, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people can have abnormal reactions to certain things. Like, you know, people still die from bee stings. In fact, did you know that more people die every year around the world from bee stings than they do from shark attacks?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, actually, yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. But we have this humongous fear of these big, nasty, great whites that patrol in the ocean looking for you, when in fact it's a tiny little bee that can give you such a bad reaction that it can kill you.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. So we're partway through 2018 now. Obviously, we're heading towards Christmas and we're heading towards 2019. But what are your plans for the rest of this year? And then what are your plans going into 2019?
Okay, well, my business is very new. I mean, it's around about a year old, so I'm looking to sort of stabilise the business and get the word out there, so do more shows like yours, Neil, and to meet more people, give me more clients. I'm very, very active on social media, so again, it's a case of expanding that and sort of building out on my website and just becoming more known and helping more people, because I get a real kick out of helping people. I love it.
Seeing that transformation.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, okay, I get paid to do this and it pays my bills, but it's the transformation, the look on a person's face when they realise that the thing that's been bugging them for 5, 10 or 20 years or more had just gone and it isn't coming back. That's why I do it.
It's a weight off their shoulders.
Absolutely.
So can you summarise who would be your ideal client? Who are you looking to talk to?
Looking for people sort of mid-30s up to around 50 that are in the corporate world, either looking to move upwards and onwards or looking to start their own thing, but they're feeling that they can't do it, that they don't deserve it, or there's something holding them back. And, you know, people are leaving money on the table. They're missing out on life's opportunities because they're letting this thing we call, you know, low self-esteem or imposter syndrome or whatever it is you want to call it, it's sort of like an anchor.
Yep.
It's weighing them down, pulling them back. And what I'd like to do is to cut the rope to that anchor so that you can actually take advantage of those opportunities and move onwards and upwards in your life.
And also people that do have the traditional phobias and those sorts of issues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you are afraid of spiders or you need to cut down on the 15 bottles of wine you have every night, then, yeah, come and talk to me.
Excellent, excellent. So why should people come to you? Obviously, there's, you know, there are numerous practitioners that deal with hypnosis and NLP, but why do you feel people should come and have a chat to you first?
Oh, because I'm wonderful, really. That's
of course,
the main reason.
Naturally.
It's because I don't take myself too seriously. And yes, there are lots of incredibly brilliant therapists out there, but it's like anything, it's about know, like, and trust. You're not going to divulge personal secrets to someone if you don't know them, if you don't like them, if you don't trust them. So my goal is to put myself out there. I do regular lives. I do videos so that you can get to see who I am. And if you think that you can, you know, get on with me, then please just get in touch.
Brilliant. And on that note, if people want to get in touch, what are your contact details?
The best place to find me is on Facebook, which is obviously facebook.com, Paul Wilson Hypnotist.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Paul. As I mentioned, I'll put your contact details up on social media when I do the post-show promotion, but it's been great to have you on the show, and it's been really good to find out more about what you're doing there.
I appreciate your time, Neil. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Paul. After the break, we are going to have a chat about macular degeneration.
Around.
Benny and the Jets by Elton John. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show's Facebook page. And you can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and on iTunes. Go to iTunes, go to podcasts, and search the Health Matters Radio Show. So for the next 5 or 6 minutes, we are going to have a chat about macular degeneration, or specifically age-related macular degeneration, because it is the biggest cause of sight loss in the UK. At present, it affects around 600,000 people. And it is a serious condition. It causes permanent eye damage that tends to cause a loss of eyesight in the centre of your field of vision. And it's caused by damage to the nerves in your eye. So there are many forms of macular disease, but AMD, or age-related macular degeneration, is the most common, and it normally affects people over the age of 50. And the thing is whilst there is no cure for macular degeneration, if you have the onset of the disease, you can actually stop it getting worse, and if you are at risk of it, you can reduce the risk. So as I mentioned, AMD, it affects the central vision. So your central vision may become blurry, it may become distorted, you may have these gaps or dark spots that may appear in your vision. And as it progresses, as the disease progresses, it affects your ability to see clearly. The thing is, with macular degeneration, in most cases, you will not lose your sight completely because of that disease. There'll always be some peripheral vision. But again, it's about, if you've got it, how can you stop it getting worse? And if you haven't got it and you're at risk, how can you reduce the risk? And the risk does increase as we get older, without a doubt. Around 1 in every 200 people has AMD at 60 years old. But by the time you get to 90, it affects 1 in 5. And the problem now is we're all living longer, so it's affecting more and more people. It can affect an individual's ability to drive. It can affect their ability to read and to see people's faces. And in serious cases, it can actually make you become legally blind. There's actually two types of macular degeneration. One's called dry, and one's called wet. So the dry type, it develops slowly, it causes gradual, slight to severe vision loss, and it is the most common. It's a slow deterioration of the cells of the macula, and as these retinal cells die off, they're not renewed. And this happens over many, many years. So the term dry does not mean the person has dry eyes. It just means the condition is not wet, and we'll come on to wet now. So wet macular degeneration. This happens actually very quickly. It's generally a sudden change in your sight, and this happens when abnormal blood vessels grow under the macula, and these leak blood and fluid. And this is the most serious type. So, as I mentioned, wet AMD can develop very suddenly, but if it's treated and caught quickly, then it doesn't generally get more serious. But obviously, if you suddenly have a big change in your eyesight, you should be talking to your doctor, you should be talking to the hospital and getting your eyes checked out. Because the earlier it's actually diagnosed, the better. So if you've got vision changes, even if they are starting to affect you as you get older, perhaps your close range vision's not so good, or you're getting floaters in your eye, or you're getting dark spots in the eye, then maybe it's time to have your eyes checked out. It's like it's like many conditions. You know, for regular listeners to my show, you'll know I talk about things like blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and blood sugars. These go undiagnosed for so long until you get symptoms. And then when you get symptoms, people just put it down to old age or getting older. And it's not always the case. So if your vision has changed, particularly if it has changed quickly, then go and get it checked out. In terms of causes of macular degeneration, obviously age is a factor, but there are lifestyle choices that can affect the onset of the disease. If you're a smoker, if you're carrying too much weight, if you have an unhealthy diet, or you have a condition that affects blood vessels, like high cholesterol, and like high blood pressure, and also diabetes, then you are at higher risk of macular degeneration, and obviously losing, potentially losing some of your eyesight. In terms of diagnosis, an optometrist will examine the back of your eye using a special instrument. You also may need to have an angiogram of your eye, and you may be asked to do vision tests as well. And by doing so, they will be able to check the eye and see if it's if macular degeneration is the cause of your eyesight issues. In terms of the symptoms of macular degeneration, again, lots of people put this down to getting older, because when you actually listen to this list of symptoms, you can see how it would affect older people. Not being able to focus on close objects is the main symptom. Okay, so if you're struggling to read close up, if looking at your watch is becoming out of focus, if reading a newspaper or a book is becoming out of focus, that is a common symptom of macular degeneration. But also, if you've got general blurred vision or blind spots, if you specifically have reduced vision in the center of your eye, or center of your vision, if you have trouble reading small print, or you need a brighter light to do close work, if perhaps you have issues going from dark to light or light to dark, if maybe that's quite painful or quite difficult for you, that can be a symptom. If you have problems judging distances or recognizing faces, or if straight lines, so things like lampposts, if they seem a bit bent or a bit wavy, then that can be a symptom as well. As I mentioned, there is no cure to macular degeneration. We can reduce the risk, and we can recognize the symptom to get early treatment. And it is about the treatment to prevent further loss of eyesight. And that helps the individual to maintain their independence for as long as possible and to prevent more damage. But in some cases, medication might be required, surgery might be required, or laser therapy might be required. In wet macular degeneration, the most common treatment now is regular injections of medication into the back of the eye that can help to reduce the inflammation and actually help to reduce the leakage of blood and fluid. So just remember, prevention is better than cure. Reducing risk is better than dealing with the issue. So if you feel that you might be at risk, if you're of a certain age, if you're getting into your 40s and 50s, then things like not smoking, monitoring your blood pressure to make sure it's within the normal range is good. Eating a diet that's rich in fruit and vegetables, omega-3 fats and unprocessed foods is good. Wearing sunglasses when you're exposed to sunlight. And just generally living a healthier lifestyle, controlling your weight, exercising regularly. And also, under the guidance of your doctor, they may recommend taking antioxidant supplements to help with your eyesight as well. So if you're in any doubt about your eyesight, please do get it checked out. Don't just put it down to just getting older. Maybe if you are struggling to read books or you're struggling with bright lights, then get it checked out. It might not be an issue, but if it is, it's better to get it diagnosed and dealt with early. So we come to the end of the show. I would like to thank Paul once again for coming on show.
Thank you.
And I'd like to just remind you of the show's social media feeds. It's on Twitter at Health Radio Show and Facebook, The Health Matters Radio Show. And please do listen again and all previous shows, because the shows are full of useful information. And if you'd like to come on the show, as Paul has done today, and talk about your background and what you're doing now and how you can help people, then please contact me via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and we'll see about having you on the show as a guest on a future show. And if you have any questions in the meantime, please don't hesitate to contact me via my website. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But until the same time next week, stay happy, stay healthy, have a great week, and I'll catch you next Monday.
Is a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. take you out of this place. Someone